Hey guys, what's going on? It's Josh JCL Felto for the Writer's Lens, and today I'm bringing on another special guest, Dr. Robert Snyder, who is a professor at Slippery Rock University in Slippery Rock, PA. He's a former Army officer of 15 years and is also an author, which of course is very important to me and my podcast. So he's the author of a book called What is a Veteran Anyway? Say hello, Dr. Snyder.
How you doing today, Josh?
Good, good, good. Thanks for coming on this podcast of mine. I'm glad I was able to twist your arm. How I got connected with Dr. Snyder is we actually were just at a Meet the Authors event in Hermitage, Pennsylvania about a week or so ago now from the time that we're doing this. And just so happened to be plopped down next to each other. And, you know, just from being in close proximity, we started having a conversation. And I saw that you had written a book. And also saw that you were someone that had been traditionally published. You were not someone that was self-published, which is what I am. And that really intrigued me because typically I run into a lot of folks in the creative, creative circles that I run into are self-published authors because so many people are doing that. So I thought it was really cool running into somebody that has found a way to break through the traditional publishing mold and get in there with an agency and with an actual traditional publisher. So one of the big reasons why I wanted to bring you on. So thanks again for being on here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your book then, sir. I know I gave you a little bit of an intro. And what inspired you to write a book called What is a Veteran Anyway?
Yeah. First of all, we'll start with how I even got into writing children's books. As an elementary school teacher, because I finished my college degree with a degree in elementary education. And I remember the first school I was teaching at out near the Philadelphia area, we brought in this author to do an assembly. And I saw that and thought, wow, that's really cool. That's something that I think I would want to do someday. So it's kind of like, even though you're adult, you someday when I grow up, this is what I want to be type of things. So I had the seeds planted back then, and I had some interest in science, which is what I normally teach. So I put together a few manuscripts that were sort of science-oriented, but they weren't really anything of quality or substance, and the market was just flooded with science materials. So that kind of just sort of went on to the back burner. But what it did do was it gave me the practice writing so that when I found my niche, I found my sort of target content, that it kind of made it come together much easier. So the idea of coming up with this one happened when I was actually deployed in Iraq, and most of the time our operational tempo was really pretty quick, so you didn't have time to just sit and reflect and write and that type of things. But there were also chunks of time when things were sort of down and you had time to read books or do whatever. So I specifically remember we were dealing with a really bad sandstorm. I mean, sand was, you know, rushing in from underneath the bottoms of the tents. We really thought the tent was just going to take off.
Wow.
And I just got to thinking, this is kind of surreal. I'm sitting here in the desert in Iraq, and my students back home are going to be asking me when I go back, what do we do here? What's that even all about? So it was right then and there that I took out a pen and paper and I started to draft the first copy of this book. Now, this was in 2003. This was when the war first kicked off. We were the first military police battalion into Baghdad. So in 2004, I wrote that book and I wrote several other ones too, one of which will be the next one coming out. And I didn't think much of it, just sort of put those notes away. And when I came back from Iraq in 2004, I was like, okay, so now here's my time. So I tried to take the approach, and I don't know, you know, for people writing in other genres, but in the children's book world, there's a company called the Children's Book List, Children's Book Publishing List, and they list all the publishers, the regular publishing houses that will seek manuscripts from unsolicited authors. So what I did is I took that list, I printed it out, I went through and I highlighted all the ones that sort of looked like they fit the kind of books that I was writing that accepted, you know, unsolicited manuscripts. And then I started that process of sending it out. This was, again, 2004. So we didn't have all the electronic email was there, but it wasn't a main mode going on. So
yeah, it's hard to believe that was just that close ago. It was only 10 years, 10 plus
Yeah.
years ago. I mean, it's
Yeah.
amazing.
Yeah. And it was the old-fashioned way where you put a copy of the manuscript in an envelope, you took to the post office with the cover letter in there.
Wow.
And most of them stated right on there that it could not be a multiple submission. So you couldn't just send out to a dozen or more publishers at once and hope it resonated with one of them. You had to send to one, wait till they reviewed it, which sometimes was a 6-month process, and then wait for that rejection letter to come back before you could put another envelope together and send it out. So I went through that process probably for about, I guess it was just a little under a year. Actually, it was pretty lucky the first time through. I found a publisher out of Chicago and Champion Press, and she was interested in all four of the books that I was sort of promoting in that set of manuscripts. And we met in New York City, signed a contract, and everything was set to go for this one, What Is a Veteran Anyway? She had an in-house illustrator do the illustrations. It was about to go to press, and she went bankrupt with her company and sent me everything back, including the illustrations that were done. But what I the, this the piece of information I did not have was who the actual illustrator was. So at that point in time, my marriage was crumbling from the whole deployment, and I just didn't have time to focus on sending those books out anymore. I just kind of shoved it aside and just tried to survive that aspect of my life that was kind of crumbling around me. And after I got through all that, I was like, okay, I'm ready to do this again. So I started the whole process over again. It was still early on with paper copies, and then towards the end, I could send some emails out, but it was still a single submission at a time. And I had remembered in the earlier batch that I'd sent out that there was a publisher who liked the second book, Why Did Daddy Have to Leave, and had mentioned that she thought that would do well, but she couldn't publish it at the time. She had other projects going on. So I thought, well, okay, here was a person that was interested in it. Let me just tell them it's still there. So I sent it back to Blue Marlin, and she was kind of shocked that it was still available, and at this point in time had the opportunity to look at it. And I actually convinced her to, no, wait a minute, let's look at this other book first, because I'm thinking audience-wise, a book about veterans in general will have a larger audience than a book called Why Did Daddy Have to Leave, geared more specifically for kids dealing with the feelings of a deployment. So I asked her if we could do the What Is a Veteran Anyway first, because I thought that would reach a larger audience. And she agreed, and we put that together. And even though I didn't know who the illustrator was, it turned out to be a blessing, because she was able to get Ron Himmler, who is a very esteemed illustrator in the children's book business. You
He's
want to
from
take a look at
Cleveland.
his work. Yeah, exactly.
From
so he's from
Cleveland,
Cleveland.
from my home, from where I'm
He's in Arizona
at.
now, but he had done a really nice book by Eve Bunting called The Wall about the Vietnam War Memorial. And I think his ability to do that and his interest in the military part with that resonated with him, and he decided to do this one as well. And you've seen the cover of it, so you've seen in the illustrations. He did a magnificent job. So he is also doing the current one, Why Did Daddy Have to Leave, that is in draft stage right now.
That's awesome, man. I mean, that's such a great story just overall because, I mean, even though it's a little over 10 years ago that you went through this whole process, I mean, the whole idea to me actually now, considering I started this whole path of mine probably about 5 years ago now, I would say, getting published and self-publishing, the whole daunting aspect of sending out a letter and having to wait 3 to 6 months to even get a no or a yes just seems like just like an eternity. And I know that's why a lot of people have turned to self-publishing because of the fact that going out to an agent or going out to a big publisher can take a long time. And I think in just, we all want answers right away. But that was the way we had to do things. I mean, that was the way we had to do things 10 plus years ago. So I really give you a lot of credit for being able to go through it that way. And obviously having a good idea that, someone wanted to back and get behind. So that's just great. Now, I know that Blue Marlin is out on the East Coast, or
Correct.
out in New York and whatnot. Now, were there other than agencies and publishers that were interested though, or that you got like nose back like in tandem, or like how, what was the whole process then there as far as that?
Well, it was a steady stream of no's for quite a long period. I have a whole binder still full of them, just because most houses will publish anywhere from 3 to 6 children's books a year, and they're probably getting volume of you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of submissions a year. Mm-hmm. So you really have to have something that stands out, something that's different. The thing that resonated in this particular case with Blue Marlin was when she looked back, our publisher looked back and did some research, she realized that there were some books out there about veterans. Mm-hmm. None of them had been written by a veteran. So the credibility I brought to the work, having served and been overseas and actually having, you know, written this book while overseas, you know, kind of made it stand out on its own accord right there. So I think, you know, the biggest advice I could give to people listening to this that are aspiring to get published is, you know, number one, don't give up. You know, a no from one publisher doesn't mean your work's not good. It just means it's not fitting what they're looking for, to keep at it. And the second thing is to find that niche, find that thing that makes you unique. And you have to be the one to sell that to the publishing houses. You have to explain to them why yours is different, you know, and how you're going to be able to help them market it based on those differences. And that sort of made the difference for me when it came to both the first publisher that accepted it and the second.
I mean, that's actually awesome, and I'm glad you brought up all those things about not giving up, because when I first actually started wanted to get published, I tried the traditional route, and I got so many no's, like, initially, that it was really demoralizing. It was like, man, I mean, and some of them, it was almost like automated responses on their emails. It was just, I'm too full, I have too much volume as it is, I can't take any more projects on, because I write science fiction. So my science fiction books were just like, you know, we don't really have time for you. You know, we really don't have time for any more ideas right now. So it can be very, very disheartening to constantly get a no being sent back to you over and over and over again. I thought it was unique, though, how you said how there were a lot of books about veterans, but not necessarily written by a veteran. And I think that most people would say that when I think of a book written by a veteran, I may not think children's book. I may not think children's book at all. I think perhaps a memoir, or perhaps a, you know, almost like a documentary type style of, you know, these were my experiences. This is my personal journal of what happened during my time overseas or wherever I was. So that also was kind of, I will tell you, that was intriguing to me, just sitting next to you, getting to know you a little bit better, and just kind of seeing what the story of what you'd put together as far as a children's book was concerned. I thought that was very interesting. So I could see why that someone would have had an interest initially in your book.
Yeah, and you make a great point. There are a lot of memoirs and you know, biographies and so forth out there written by veterans. And I know you said you had taken a look at my website and saw my Iraq War journal that I had written and put on there. That was just my way of dealing with everything that was going on over there at the time. I just needed to get it down, you know, on paper and electronically with my laptop that I had in the later part of my deployment there. But when I looked at that, it was daunting for me to figure out how do I make that into a book to sell to adults, because the only thing I know in my, you know, background is kids, teaching kids. And that's where it connected with that earlier seed of seeing children's book authors coming and doing assemblies, where I thought, you know, that's something I want to do. And then marrying that up with the experience that I had as a veteran, particularly in Iraq, and saying, aha, here's, you know, the perfect balance now of me individually that worked for that. And that's where people need to find. They're got to be unique some way from every other individual out there. And they need to kind of exploit that, similar to what I did with going the children's route.
That's really great advice, Dr. Snyder. I think that's hitting it home right there, because I think so many people want to be copycats because they see someone that is successful in some aspect of writing or perhaps has a message, and they want to be able to do the exact same thing. And they may not necessarily go, well, maybe my story is more unique than what this person has already done, you know, because you want to have your own voice. But you also want to be able to portray yourself as having your own voice. So I think that's actually really, that's good stuff. Speaking of which, what you were saying about how coming back to the States and being able to tell people about your book idea after you've been signed on, how else might you have raised awareness about your book once you were getting it published? Because obviously I met you at the author's event.
Yes.
But what other ways have you sort of marketed yourself, marketed your idea, and got the book out into other people's hands?
Well, one of the things that I pledged to really help Blue Marlin do, because it is a smaller publishing house. Is and part of the way I marketed again was, you know, kind of saying, here's how it's unique, here's how I can also help with the marketing, is I knew I wanted to sort of self-promote a lot. Mm-hmm. So the publishing house did an amazing job of the technical details of getting it listed in Barnes & Noble, getting it listed on Amazon, and sending courtesy copies out to agencies that do, you know, a lot of awards or a lot of reviews. So that part of it was taken off of the load from me, because I would not have known even how to go about doing that. How do I, you know, find states that I'm interested in, mm-hmm. and, you know, sending these copies out for them to review. And through that action by my publisher, I then received the Notable Trade Book for Young People Award through the National Council of Social Studies, which is a pretty big, legitimate professional organization in the education field. So just having that promoted the book tremendously nationwide. From my end, having, you know, taught many teachers over my 17 years at the universities that are now out in schools, I also knew I wanted to take this book on the road. So this wasn't going to be a book that was just going to, you know, be for sale for teachers to pick up and, mm-hmm. you know, right. use around Veterans Day. I wanted to be out in the schools. I wanted to be out there in my uniform and to show them what veterans look like, and, you know, to really kind of convey that message to them. And, you know, that takes me to another funny story I want to share about this, because, you know, and I think you came in right after I had gone live on my Facebook page explaining it to my fans on there. But I wear my desert uniform, which is now outdated. So, you know, it's basically like a Civil War reenactor. It's just, it's a, you know, an
Iraqi
freedom.
It looks good, though. It looks very impressive.
It's an authentic uniform. It you know, it wore its threads out in Iraq for sure. It was one of the four uniforms that I rotated in and out during that year. You know, a modern soldier, a current soldier that's still in, you know, they're wearing that digital pattern now. So, but I like to wear that because I like kids to see, and I'm not young anymore, but I'm still a younger veteran. And the reason that came about is when I was still teaching, this was before my deployment to Iraq, when I was teaching in my elementary classroom, I wore my class greens, which is the Army dress green uniform, mm-hmm. one Veterans Day. And I remember kids are so honest, and it's the greatest thing about kids, because they'll tell it exactly the way it is. And I had one just sincerely ask me, Mr. Snyder, he said, why are you wearing that old person uniform? And it dawned on me, the only people they've ever seen promoting veterans in public are VFW, American Legion. And you look at the volunteers in those things, it is Korean, Vietnam, and remaining World War II veterans. That's who you see at military funerals. That's who you see going out to the schools. You don't see Gulf War veterans. You don't see veterans of the Afghanistan conflict. You don't see a lot of, you know, Iraq war people out there. So it became even more of an important message for me when I take this on the road, that I'm sharing the book in PowerPoint form, but I'm showing photos of my experience in Iraq that led to why I created each page, but also for them to see the uniform and then to have a volunteer come up and dress them up in the mop suit, which is the chemical suit, and just let them kind of really get an idea of, you know, real live breathing veterans, and then to connect that back to how many veterans they have in their family that they don't even realize, because those veterans might not talk about it, you know.
That's very true.
It inspires those kids then to go back and ask more questions to their family members and ask what their jobs were in the Air Force or in the Marines or in the Army and so forth. So
that's really great. That's a really cool story, and you're right. Kids will be very honest with you about what you're doing or whatever it is that you said. That's actually a really good point. And I do think it's interesting. I mean, obviously when I got to the author event and I saw you and you had your uniform on, immediately I almost assumed, I was like, is this guy, was he currently serving? I mean, was he, you know, what did he just come back from overseas or something or other like that? And here you had served in the Iraq war, and I went, whoa, wow. Okay. That's impressive.
Your first thought was probably, boy, the recruiters are really getting desperate. They're now trying to, recruit people at the author stands. But just to come full circle on your last question about the promoting.
Yeah.
So Blue Marlin published by sending out to agencies that would review it, critique it, you know, provide awards if it deserved it, and kept stuff going by promoting it on their website. So you can get it on bluemarlin.com as well as Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. From my side, I promoted it organically through the schools. So I started with the teachers that I already knew that were in schools. Mm-hmm. And early on, I offered my assemblies for free because I was a no name. You know, here's a brand new book. It's untested. Right. And that got me in front of kids and audiences. And of course, a lot of kids would buy the book. So I was making book sales on that. But that grew to the point now where I have so many, you know, requests that now I can charge a little fee to cover, you know, me going to these places as well as still ordering for the pre-orders. So I'm covering organically doing that. I've also been sending out a lot of letters to VFWs and American Legions saying, hey, here's this book that's out here. I'm trying to spread the same message that your organizations are. Help me out. If you know a school, you know, please pass this on to the school. If you want to order a book and have me, you know, sign it as a memorial to your post or to an individual from your post that maybe, you know, was lost in battle, and mm-hmm. then it can be donated to your, you know, to the school, local school. So those have been the ways that I've promoted, and the combination of the two has been successful for me. Obviously not a, you know, New York book, you know, Times bestseller as a children's book, but, you know,
maybe
I'm not,
soon,
I'm not
though,
competing
you don't
know. I'm coming nowhere close to Pete the Cat, which is the all the rage with kindergartners right now, but certainly pleased with where the book has gone.
That's excellent, man. Yeah, I to me, that would be kind of like a foreign world to me, the children's book arena, as far as knowing, you know, what is super popular. I mean, I guess I'll be into it soon because my son's 2.5 years old. I'll start seeing more and more of what is popular, I guess you could say. But, you know, to me, that is kind of a foreign place as far as, you know, what is super popular right now. But, yeah. That's great, though. I mean, me as a self-published author, the self-promotion is everything to me. You know, I have to get out. I have to be at those events like the one I met you at. I try to find just anything I can as far as just to be a presence somewhere. And obviously, gaining a following online is just as important, too. I mean, having a website, having a Facebook page, having Twitter, you know, anything basically that can help you reach a larger audience. But also being smart about it. I had talked about it in another episode where I said, depending on what your unique message is, you have to figure out what unique social platform you should be on, like what mm-hmm. fits your message best. Now, granted, Facebook is kind of a no-brainer because it reaches so many people. I mean, it's
right.
It is the biggest platform out there, so you would start there. But I think that's really good that Blue Marlin would say you can do a lot of this on your own. You can go off and self-promote it yourself. Because I know that sometimes traditional publishers can be a little more controlling in that aspect where they don't want you right. kind of going off the reservation and just taking your books across the country when they're not aware of it or whatever is going on. So another reason why a lot of people have said, oh, you know, maybe I want to do self-publishing because I don't want, you know, someone over my shoulder telling me what to do. But it sounds mm-hmm. to me like you have a little more free reign, which is great. I think that's really great. I did have... I don't know if you had another thought. I did have another question real quick in regards to a lot of the kids. Do you find that when it comes to presenting your book and talking about, you know, what is it that makes a veteran, is there a lot of, as far as the interest from kids when they come up to you and ask you questions, you know, hey, you know, Mr. Snyder, what was it like over in Iraq? Are the questions more surface level, like, hey, you know, what's it like being in the Army, or what was it like being in the Army, or is it, you know, what's it like being overseas, being away from family? Because a lot of the pictures I saw in your book showed a lot of that, hey, we're going overseas, you know, we're leaving, we're not going to be around for a while. Does that give the kids a perspective then? You know, do you think it gives them a perspective on actually what is going on?
Yeah, and so that was one of the most difficult things in putting the book together was how to keep it light enough and on a mm-hmm. level that students could connect with, because clearly they have no way of, most adults over here have no way of understanding right. what it is that veterans are really going through when they're struggling through combat. So I had to really kind of remove the violent aspect of combat out of the book and keep it with things the students could relate to. So, for example, there's a page in there that talks about what veterans eat. It talks about MREs and what the MREs, the meals ready to eat, are like. And the kids can kind of connect that to their cafeteria food. You know, how we get water, you know, it's either air dropped in or it's, you know, provided by water buffaloes. And, you know, there's a picture of a water buffalo and what that looks like. And you're right. Like, oh, there's tanks of water coming in. So it's a lot of sort of day to day things that kids do, you know, sort of every day in their own lives. And it shows them how it's different for a veteran to be doing those things. So there's a page where the veterans are sleeping on a ground in a poncho. So it kind of, you know, for them, I'm like, oh, wow, I sleep in a bed. I'm nice and comfortable. Look, these people are sleeping on the ground, you know, in the sand. So that's how I make that connection for students to realize. And the overarching theme is I want them to understand that veterans provide a lot of sacrifice, you know, of their own selves, not just in the ultimate sacrifice of dying for their country, but just on a day-to-day basis. There's a lot of hardships being a veteran, and if kids can understand and appreciate that at an early age, then as they get older, they can grow to appreciate the other things. So that is the overarching thing. But it's funny because the normal questions I get are usually superficial. The one question always comes up: did I shoot anyone? You know, so I have to explain to them I was a military police officer, and you know, while we you know we're armed and locked and loaded, and you know. In my particular unit where we were at, we were still apprehending a lot of looters and things like that. It was, you know, before the insurgency really picked up. So while there were, you know, firefights and there were, you know, IEDs, you know, that some of us were running into, you know, we didn't have to, you know, shoot anyone. So that's the first question I always get. They always want to know what kind of guns I carried. You know, that's sort of the big question. So, you know, normally I'll start off right away. I'll just say, I'll tell everyone right now, I didn't shoot anyone while I was there, you know, and you know, I carried an M16 and a pistol, you know, 9mm pistol, because that's standard for military police. But, you know, there are some kids that think a little deeper, and they will ask those questions. Well, you know, were you sad that you weren't home with your own kids? Because, you know, they learned through the book that, you know, my kids were 4 and 7 at the time. So,
Oh, wow.
and talk about them that, you know, the hard thing for me being a dad was I wasn't there for their birthdays. I wasn't there for Christmas, and talk about those kinds of things. So there are some students that will ask deeper level questions, but usually it's like, yeah, what's your favorite MRE? You know, what kind of, you know, what's your favorite ammunition? You know, did you ever, you know, ride in a tank? You know, but that's how kids learn about the world around them. So, you know, I you know, entertain all those questions, and it's good stuff because it's got them dialoguing. But I always try to send them back home with questions in their family to see, okay, where are the veterans in your family? Because a lot of you have these superheroes that are in your family, and you maybe have an uncle that, you know, doesn't talk about it, but maybe if you ask them, he'll give you a little bit of information about it if you're being asked. So
Cool.
that's kind of where that goes.
I feel so much better, Dr. Senator, that I didn't ask you those questions when I met you.
But now you have the answers.
Yeah, now I have the answers. In a roundabout way, I got you to answer my questions.
Yes.
He didn't shoot anybody. He had that kind of gun, you know, just all that kind of stuff.
I think I did tell you. I just to elaborate a couple of stories though. So, you know, when we first deployed in the country, and you and I are talking about this, I was supposed to be in a contingent coming in from the north, and that changed, and we went into Kuwait, and our equipment was still on a boat in the Mediterranean, but everything was falling apart quickly in Baghdad because the 3rd Infantry Division swept through so quickly. They were, you know, originally planning for 3 to 4 weeks, and it was, you know, literally just days for them to ransack the whole way there. And ransack, I mean, be able to gain the ground, not, you know, destroy civilians and that type of stuff. But there was a lot of looting. The people were seeing that as an opportunity for lawlessness. So, and this was also when the first remnants of, you know, the terrorists were coming in for jihad. So at this point in time, we had a lot of civilian truck drivers bringing food, supplies, medical equipment, mail, and so forth into Baghdad and north. And they were being hijacked by these terrorists and beheaded on YouTube videos. So the early plan for us was, let's take these MPs. Yes, they don't have vehicles, but they do have their weapons. So let's put them shotgun with these civilian truck drivers, and let's send them, you know, to provide security. And that worked out great. It was interesting. I remember I was with a guy. His name was Tank. That was his nickname, Tank. And
That's fitting.
and uh, he he was you know, just a you know just a, an everyday civilian truck driver from the U.S. that saw this as a chance to make good money, not, you know, realizing how dangerous it was going to be. And
Wow.
we did this journey 2 days up through Baghdad, north to Balad, and 2 days back. And it brought a whole new sense of what was really happening there. So we were then, a couple weeks later, airdropped in to take over the jails and prisons. And we had hotwired a bus to use to transport prisoners in. And there was another captain and I, and we had the driver with us, and we're taking this bus to our prison. And it's an empty bus, and we have the radio cranking, and we're just being silly in here, just a chance to let down. And we're just kind of jumping around on the seats, and we get to our prison, and we realize there's bullet holes that weren't there at the beginning all across the bus windows across the side. So we were being shot at, literally, and didn't know it, because you can't hear the sound of a bullet when it's coming at you. Wow. You just hear the thud of it hitting. But wow. Because we had the radio cranked up, listening to some music on one of the Iraqi stations, we didn't hear that. So that was the wake-up call to say, hey, we got to take this serious. That, yeah. You know, this is not a joyride, no matter where you're at or what you're doing. You've got to be vigilant constantly. So that kind of changed things right then and there as far as what we were in for and constantly sort of being, on patrol, so to speak.
That's amazing. I mean, I can't fathom, in a way, you know, obviously, since I don't have any of those experiences to speak to. So, sometimes for me, I've thought it's difficult for me to get up in the middle of the night with my 2-year-old. But considering what you guys have had to go through, I find it incredibly commendable. So, thank you again. I mean, I'll thank you again before this is over. But thank you again then for that service then, Dr. Snyder. I wanted to lead that into a question about just getting back to the book, as far as wanting to write a book about veterans. And you had alluded to the second book that you wanted to do, which was about, you know, why did Daddy have to leave? And as far as where that is in the process as to, you know, when it's coming out, where it will be, you know, what it's going to be available with, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, again, this was another one that I wrote while I was in Iraq in 2003. Mm-hmm. And, with the success of this book, I approached Blue Marlin again and said, hey, you know, this was the one you were originally interested in. Mm-hmm. You know, you caved to my decision to go with What is a Veteran? What do you think is now the time? Do you want to go ahead and do this? And they said, yes. And, we're like, great. Can we get Ron again? And they checked with him and he was on board to do another one. So, it's interesting probably for you as a writer of novels to look at a book that's, you know, 32 pages and say, well, there's 3 sentences on each page. I knock this out in 15 minutes a day, you know, and I'm writing for a year and a half. But it's amazing how many edits still have to go into that, because the less words you use, mm-hmm. the more selective you have to be about the message that those words are conveying. So in some ways, I've found it much tougher than, for example, writing, you know, chapters of my dissertation. That's the only thing I can compare to your sort of world as far as writing a novel. You know, I have to be much more precise with that wording. So there's a lot of back and forth on edits to the wording. And then that wording then goes to the illustrator, who is not a veteran, who has not had those experiences, and he has to try to visualize what I'm visualizing through the text that I gave him, and to put those illustrations together. And those come back in just a black and white draft. We have those ones back. I received those about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I had time to then look at each one. And it kind of is a hard thing for me to do, because here's this man who's so talented that, you know, I can tell just bled his heart into these drafts. And for me to nitpick and say, well, we really need to change this page because, you know, you have the American flag on the wrong sleeve. But at the same time, that stuff's important for veterans, because attention to detail is everything you learn from basic training. So I don't want a book going out there that's going to portray military soldiers if everything is not completely correct. So so that's the give and take now that's going on, is he's got a good vision for some of these pages, but I've got another vision. And then the publisher has what they want to see come together on this. So it's this sort of magical mix of 3 different people compromising, and you're married, so you know what compromising even as 2 people sometimes can be. So it's it's kind of a neat mix to look at that and to see the ideas that everyone has, and then just to see that commonality come full circle. Back to the first book, What is a Veteran Anyway, when the cover came out, Ron had done 3 different cover options. And I wanted the one that looked the most rough and tough and military, because that's my mindset, is, you know, want this just to look, you know, really BA. And my publisher looked at it and said, no, I'm going to override you on this one, because this one has a grandfather in here walking with the kids, sort of telling the story, you know, about a veteran. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. You know, look at the audience. We're looking for kids. We're looking for veterans. They're going to buy it for their kids. And that made perfect sense. And it took me a while to even catch the brilliance of Ron's work there. If you look at my book, you'll see that the grandfather is walking with the kids. And if you look at the very last page, you see the grandfather walking away as if he's done telling the story. So it kind of comes full circle through the story to the grandfather then sort of walking away sort of leaving the story that was told in the book then.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I was just pulling it up as we were talking about it, just to take a look, see at the cover, and it is that is good. I mean, as far as eye catchy, and it definitely gets right to your target audience. As far as what you were saying is to having a veteran, an older veteran, perhaps interested in it, and saying, "Hey, I want to pass this on to my kids or my grandkids or my nephew, nieces, whoever it may be," and say, "Look, this could be a I don't want to say a super in-depth way of looking at it, but this will convey a lot of the emotion that comes along with it." So yeah, I concur with their decision as far as overriding you in on that one at least for that specific instance.
So that's where we're at now. We're just in that, still the draft illustrations going back and forth, but we're looking at a target date of May 2018
Awesome.
for the release. So.
Awesome. And these guys, as far as projecting that, I mean, they stay pretty, like, this is the hard release, like, we know for sure we're gonna get to May, or is it that kind of a flexible thing?
Well, in publishing, that can always vary a little bit. The book, What is a Veteran Anyway, was set to be released before Veterans Day so I could do my author visits, which I had already lined up. Now, it was much less pressure this year because I already have the book in stock. Last year, I'm promoting this. I'm selling this to schools. I've got, assemblies set up. I've got pre-orders of, 120 books. And I've
That's
got all this
great.
stuff, and it was looming. This was October, and this was all looming in November, and I have no books yet. And, the books were supposed to be in, and the publisher and I were going back and forth, and there was a delay in the print house, which those kinds of things happen, and there was a delay in the shipping. And I'm getting to the point where I'm really, really worried that I'm not going to have books to go do these first visits. And I'm thinking, what a way to start this career off, not even having books to sell at the first thing. But she was amazing. She worked with the publishing house to get, the printers to get some of the books actually shipped by air to me, so we had them in stock and on hand for the release date. But I don't think anything can ever be completely set in stone when you have a number of different elements that can go wrong,
Oh
such
yeah,
as delay
absolutely.
at printers or delay in shipping from the printers and those kinds of things. But it all came together in part because of her effort to get some flown in.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So very, very good then. So you do have like a obviously from the event that we were at this past weekend, you do have quite a few more visits lined up for until the end of the year, correct? As far as
Yeah,
what?
not till the year, just till Veterans Day. It's I said, it's an interesting thing because teachers get really interested in promoting Veterans Day, which they should in November. And even though we do thank and celebrate veterans throughout the year, I've never had a time where I haven't been, very well respected as a veteran in a community or, anywhere. But teachers are on to the next thing, because Christmas is coming. So now they've got to gear up on that. And then it's the next thing. So Veterans Day has its place. It's that month up to Veterans Day, and then the book visits—they're not really there after that. I get some around Memorial Day because I can tie my work into Memorial Day in some respects. But typically, I'll get a few over winter when I travel to Florida because some of my former students that are teaching in schools and in the Carolinas and in Florida, then that fits their time frame because I'm there and it's handy. But locally, it's been the barrage where, like I said, I'm doing 14 in 1 month's time, so I'm completely exhausted by the end of it. Because I'm still teaching on campus several days a week, but it's worth it. It's the motivation you get when you walk out and 300 to 500 students are sitting in that cafeteria or in that auditorium, just waiting to see what you've got for them is just amazing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations to you, sir, for all that. That's really great. Was there anything else then? I know we're probably going to be wrapping it up here pretty soon, as far as what you wanted to cover, or I did want to at least plug and say that for anyone that's listening that's interested more, I mean, you can check out your website, which is robertsnyderbooks.com, which I was plugging around on there after you and I had met. Lots of really good info in there, including your bio and just information about the book, and I think a couple of other links in there. Is there any place else you'd want to send somebody to? I mean, there's a Facebook page.
Well, you mentioned Facebook, so they can go, same thing, Robert Snyder Books on Facebook, and they can like the page there. And the website is, I make updates on it, but websites are fairly static just by nature with websites. There is the online link to my Iraq War Journal, which they can check out from the page, from my webpage. But Facebook, I'm constantly updating with pictures from my visits. So it's that nice thing where a kid's smiling with the books in hand, or, you know, some of the kids dressed up with the mop equipment. So I, you know, I try to promote a lot of that, so that kind of gives a nice kind of warm feel, even for the veterans that are watching that, to see that these kids are, you know, learning to recognize veterans, and they are enjoying learning about veterans as they see those kinds of things. But I guess, you know, for other, you know, listeners that are still trying to self-promote, I'm a very visual person, so I also use Instagram a lot. As you can tell by my responses that are not short, I'm very wordy too. So I struggle
Every writer
with Twitter.
Is, man. Every writer is.
I struggle with Twitter because I just can't keep my stuff short enough.
Thank you. I love that. I love the fact that you don't like Twitter, because I can't.
Yeah, so I have an active Twitter page, but typically, and I'll be quite honest here, my tweets all basically stem around, here's what I'm posting on my Instagram page.
Yeah.
Here's my nice little blurb about it, and then here's swiping the button that says post it to your Twitter too. So they really get the first sentence of, you know, a 5-sentence, blurb that I'm putting with the photo. But Instagram is the other one that I use. I hear a lot of people say, well, the more platforms you get on, the more audience you can reach. But I found you can really burn out trying to reach everything. You know, I have a Snapchat account. I'm just not good at Snapchat. I'm too old, I guess, to understand the thrill of the filters. I mean, yes, they're funny sometimes, but I don't see a place for that for me. And, you know, in my uniform with, you know, dog ears, you know, and things like that. So
I'm right there with you.
So I've learned to pick and choose the media that I'm strong at. You know, I have a Pinterest account, and I really want or need to get more into that one, because my audience of teachers use Pinterest a lot for ideas for lesson plans.
That's right.
But I have a pin board of recipes, and that's about the extent I've ever used Pinterest. And sometimes I feel very awkward and I can't figure this out, and it should be so simple. So it's just not as intuitive to me as some of the other platforms. But that's my goal, is to maybe get better with that one. But again, back to the message, you don't have to be active on every platform. Reach the ones that are strong for you. If you're not a visual person, don't waste time on Instagram. Do your Twitter, do your tweets, Snapchat or whatever that works for you. But you don't have to plug them all. Plug the ones that work for you.
Awesome. That's great advice. Coming from a teacher, that's good. Coming from someone who probably knows a little thing or two about teaching people what's right, what's wrong. So awesome. Well, thank you again, for being on my podcast, Dr. Snyder. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for all your insights as well. Again, really enjoyed just getting to catch up with you, again. And I wanted to thank you again for your service, sir. Awesome admiration coming from me as far as, what you've been able to do. So thank you again.
Okay. Thank you very much. I was pleased to be on, and it was great to get to know you. And I think that's one of the big benefits, from those kinds of events, is you network and you meet so many other people. So I wish you the best in your career, and I'm sure we will be in touch quite frequently as we keep bouncing ideas and so forth off of each other.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. You have a good night.
You too.